Committee will come to order. Good morning. Again, today is the day of many, 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 many meetings. Our goal in our conversation this morning is to be through our agenda by 11:30 or a little earlier if possible, if we believe that we need to revisit some of the topics because we're not done with them. That's fine. We can come back to them at a future meeting, but we do need to get through this agenda by 11:30 today. We are all expected at our BOMA luncheon at noon, and we have a council prep meeting ahead of that, so I'm going to honor that. Today we are going to do a round of introductions as it is our first meeting with our new council member, Basuri. We are going to talk about our work plan as it evolved in the 2018 budget conversation and policy sessions as well. We will talk about the budget going into this year's budget updates, things that we're going to keep our eye on as we go through the 2019 year, and also kind of looking ahead to the 2020 budget. There'll be a few updates on our COP program, COPP, not COP, program, as well as district council funding. So we have a lot to cover, and I appreciate the work that went into this ahead of time. I know each of you has had an opportunity to talk to either myself or Vice President Naker about a draft version of the work plan. So with that, I think we will start with introductions. So Ms. Naker, for the past few years we've done this in a more of a retreat format, and we're going to reduce that amount of retreat format in our retreat and focus a bit more just on the work as we have been doing. It's been more of an ongoing process that we've had, but nevertheless, people have said that they enjoyed the kind of the icebreaker / more human piece of the retreat as well. So I think it'd be great if we'll let Ms. Naker start and introduce yourself, maybe the area you represent and some information that you think would help get us going and now share a little bit about who you are and why you're here.
Sure. Well, good morning and welcome, Councilmember Basuri. It's exciting to see you sitting there. I am Rebecca Naker. I represent Ward 2 on the St. Paul City Council. I am the mom of a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I spend a lot of my time trying to keep the 4-year-old from beating up the 5-year-old. So that's what I was doing this morning. Spoons thrown across kitchens, that sort of thing. Prior to this, I was a middle school science teacher and worked for education nonprofits, so I come at this with a lot of interest in how the city can benefit young people. And I don't know if we should be sharing priorities for the year yet or not. No, just later.
I don't know if people are prepared for that.
Yeah. Yes. And my favorite movie is Contact with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey. Watch it every couple years just to remind myself of existentialism and our place in the universe, and cry usually when I watch it. Contact.
Carl Sagan. Really good
Carl Sagan.
Classic.
Yeah. Right. I'll give you a copy. Anyway. See, I'm learning something new about Councilmember Tolbert right now. So that's me. I'm really excited about this year. It's an honor to be Council Vice President. I really enjoy working with Council President Brenmo and I'm thinking about how to do our work better. And I think we've got a great plan for the year.
Great. That's awesome.
Am I next? Okay, great. Well, hello. I'm Councilmember Mitra Jalali Nelson. I usually just go by Mitra. I'm the new council member. I ran in a special election last year, and I'm really excited to turn the corner on 2019 and do all this work together, and we have a full team again. That's a really nice feeling. So we're all very excited to get to work with you. And a little bit about me is prior to being a council member, was an organizer. I was a social studies teacher. I worked most recently as a policy and outreach aide for then Congressman Ellison, and now I'm trying to bring that experience to what our city is working on. And I love Marvel Comics, and Contact is a good movie. And those are my two media opinions I'm sharing today. So,
Mr. Tolbert.
My name is Chris Tolbert. I represent the 3rd Ward of St. Paul, Highland Park, and most of McAllister Groveland. You're no longer the new council member. Sorry, you're now second.
Yeah.
You're the new council
that
member.
Happens.
It happens.
And you're a really old council member.
Correct. I've been on the council for 7 years now. It's been a great honor to represent the neighborhood I grew up in. You and I have had meetings in my district, so thank you for coming over to Highland. I have not seen Contact, as if it hasn't become apparent or not. But it's a great honor to serve on this, and it's great to have to serve on this board council, and it's great to have seven of us together. I look forward to serving with you, for the next year.
Oh, okay. Well, unlike your peers, I'm not a council member. My name is Nia Bang, and I am one of two policy analysts and legislative here office for the City Council. And I've been with the city for a little over 10 years.
I'm Trudy Maloney, the director of City Council Operations, and I've been with St. Paul since 2004. Prior to that, I was with the City of Minneapolis, starting with Mayor Fraser. And then prior to that, I was in Washington, D.C. at the National League of Cities. So I kind of make sure that this whole office supports and gives you the services that you need to do your job.
Before we move on to Marcia, I think we skipped too quickly away from you. Would you share a little bit about your background and how you ended up?
What about my background? There's a lot. Well, I currently don't live in the city of St. Paul. I live in the suburb, city of Woodbury. But before I came to work for the city of St. Paul, I was a budget analyst for the city of Plymouth. And prior to that, I worked for Governor Pataki. I saw because he was Republican. And I worked for his administration. I worked on education policy.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that before you told me that a month or so ago, and I was like, wow, that's really great to know, so thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Ms. Mormont.
Okay. I am, I guess, the senior person in terms of the number of years. I am entering now my 25th year in 2019 with the City of St. Paul. I came here to work for the City Council to staff the Community and Economic Development Committee and do research. I am partnered with Nia. I am a hearing officer, and I also do policy analysis. I specialize in housing and nuisance crime and nuisance other kinds of issues. And before I came here, I was at the Wisconsin Department of Trade, and I also was at the University of Wisconsin System Administration, working in women's studies and minority and disadvantaged student programs, writing grants, and doing some research there. I have been a resident of St. Paul since I came here from Madison, Wisconsin, and happily so. I've lived in almost every ward, and I am currently living in your ward, Councilmember Vasuri. So.
I didn't know that.
You did too.
Fascinating, Ms. Mormon.
I'm Holly Houston. I'm the City Council's budget chief officer, and so I organize the City Council's budget process. I'm also involved in analysis related to different budget things as they come up. So if you're curious or want more information on a topic, I would be the person to come to and make sure you get everything you need. I grew up in Highland Park area. My brother and Councilmember Tolbert knew each other. and then my grandma was an East Sider off Johnson Parkway. So I feel like I came to the city knowing a lot about the city. I now reside on the other side of the river. And I started at General Mills for 8 years, and then I moved to Anoka County and Dakota County, working in a finance capacity for human services. And I started here 3 years ago.
My turn. So my name is Councilmember Busuri. Everybody has been asking, how do you say it? How do you pronounce it? Busuri. I've been saying Missouri, but with a B. But somebody said no, that's Mus, but it's not Boo. So Busuri is my Councilmember Busuri is my name. I originally come from Mogadishu, Somalia. It's where I was born. I was raised in Kenya, and came here in 96. And I'm not going to tell you everything. It's a lot of story, but I do have two children, a two-year-old and a four-year-old. My two-year-old woke up at 4 and did not want to go back to sleep today. And my four-year-old, I got him ready for school at 6:30. So very busy, like you. I love my children. They are joy to our family, and they keep us well-rounded. St. Paul, I've lived in St. Paul since 2010, and I enjoy living in St. Paul, working in St. Paul. I get excited when I hear somebody's an educator. Mitra, I didn't know you were a social studies teacher. So I'm an educator as well, and I love those the educators who teach our kids. They're the ones who are mentoring them. They're the ones who are bringing them up, and hopefully they're setting a good example for our kids. And that's what we want to do as a city as well, to be that pillar for the next generation.
Very nice. Council Member Jane Prince, welcome. I have known Kasim for a few years now, and I'm just thrilled to be sharing the East Side with you. I've been on the council for 3 years, and there's been no greater honor in my life than having the people of Ward 7 be my boss. I'm originally from New England. I grew up in Massachusetts and went to the University of New Hampshire and became a lawyer in mid-career. And my favorite movie is On the Waterfront, about the Hoboken Longshoremen's Union. And it's a phenomenal movie if you've never seen it. Marlon Brando. At his finest.
Is it black and white?
Yes, it is. The score is by Leonard Bernstein. So it's really quite something.
Oh, goodness. That was not throwing shade when I said that either. I just was curious if it was a black and white movie.
No, it is. I could do a couple of scenes from it if you'd like.
Let's stay focused.
But just as even just from this quick round of introductions, I would say that some of the people at this table are incredible folks to play trivia with. If you ever want to go and mop the floor at Trivia Mafia, invite these folks with you, because they know everything about everything. It's amazing. So my name is Amy Brunlow, and I represent the 5th Ward on the City Council, which is Como, the North End, a bit of the East Side, and Rural Rhode Island. I have 3 kids, 13, 15, and 18 years old. And if any of you were here when I was inaugurated 7 years ago, you know how time flies. They were just little muffins then. And Sawyer, my oldest, will be off to college in the fall. So it's amazing. I was recently married to Mike Hamm, who's the parks director, and I'm the luckiest person in the world for that decision. It's wonderful. Been very, very incredible to have a new family. So that's been great. I'm really, 11 years I worked as a mediator for the Minnesota Attorney General's office. So I had a lot of opportunity to really listen to both sides of issues before deciding what the right way to move forward was. I spent a lot of time working in the utilities part of mediation, and so I have an unusually large knowledge of regulated utilities. So if you ever have questions about that, I actually know that stuff. So the trivia where I could help would be regulated utilities. I also spent 5 years in communications and marketing. I worked for an ad agency, and I worked as a marketing director for Children's Home Society and Family Services, which is both adoption agency and a family services organization. And I'm just really proud. This last year was my first year serving as council president, and I have had moments where I looked at this council as we worked through a new budget, a complicated budget, and really felt like we're a strong team, that there's a lot of thoughtfulness that goes into the decisions that we make. And I think I really feel like it was an inclusive, thoughtful process. Our staff is working hard to tie these, all of our thoughts and input together and track things that are happening at the speed of lightning. And so I really, at the end of 2019, felt like, or 2018, felt like it was a group that I'm very, very proud to be a part of. And so, so I even think that's kind of a great segue into where we're headed, because one of the things we did differently last year, first of all, we had a new mayor, but also since I started, the way that we worked our budget was the mayor presented a budget to us, and then the council deliberated about what budget we got and basically kind of fought for the things that weren't in the budget and fought with each other to get resources for our own areas. And it seemed like it was genius on the part of the administration to have us busily focus on fighting with each other at the end of a budget season instead of being part of the budget in the beginning. And so in 2018, we determined what we thought our budget priorities should be. and presented them to the mayor's office, and I would say that they were very cooperative and collaborative in that regard, and took our priorities into account when they presented their budget. And we left the state of the the budget address feeling like, wow, a lot of the things that we asked for were really included in the budget, and it really helped clear the path for the second half of the budget process to be much more thoughtful about what do we want to look for next year, what are the things that we're seeing as holes in the department, and we didn't spend time fighting with each other. In fact, we spent time fine-tuning and ended up putting forward a budget that I think we're all very proud of. What came out of the 2018 budget is a document that you should have in your packet that is a city council follow-up and work plan and capital draft. I don't know how to do that fancy thing where a draft is behind it, but if I could, that's where it would be. And this is a document that I think I'd like to start with today. I'm talking about things that we've identified as items that need as much support as a task force or a work group. Things that we just would expect to have a presentation from an outside partner or entity at our council meetings, things that we asked for during the budget process or policy sessions that we would like updates on. For example, our HR department came in and we wanted some measurable or we wanted some data about some of the initiatives that they were doing, but they really hadn't been long enough in the process to be able to show us data. And that was perfectly understandable. So we said, why don't you come back next year when you have some data that you can share with us and show us that progress that you've made. And then some things I added to the bottom, there an HRA update, which we can take separately as part of this discussion, but we have the council worked together to pass a housing resolution last year, and a large chunk of it, part of it was things that we wanted the mayor's office to do, part of it was things that the council intended to do, and a lot of it were things that the PED needed to work on a work plan for. And so I think we split up the PED portion of it under the HRA updates, and then there were some things specifically in the housing resolution and including some research on tenant protections, reducing barriers for rentals, some things about land trusts and cooperative home ownership that we wanted more research on so we would know whether or not we could move forward with any of those things, either through the council, through the HRA, or through advocacy groups. So that piece was landed in the council's lap as well. So we will discuss that. As we go through this, I will reemphasize that it says draft. Any of this can change, and it probably will, but this is as close to a consensus of what I believe through the conversations that Ms. Nanker and I have had with you is where we're at. So with that, are there questions? Does this make sense for starting out place for this year? Okay. So do you want me to keep driving, Holly, or are you...
Is there any further discussion on this document, or are you?
Well, so why don't we talk about the work groups and the task forces? Okay, so so last year I think that one of the things that came up was the most contentious was during the Truth and Taxation, in spite of all of our planning and best intentions, during the Truth and Taxation hearing for the first time since I've been here, instead of having three people, there was something like 300 people here who were concerned about adding resources for police investigators in our budget. And I believe that the council felt that the decisions that we made in terms of switching the funding from fleet to investigators and adding that capacity was a great decision based on the data that had been presented to us about workloads for the investigators. And I think subsequent to that, I've also really come to understand that throughout the recession and with the pairing of cuts to local government aid, that our police department has really shed its civilian force to a much larger extent than the police force. And we had asked in 2017 for a police staffing study to get an understanding of what police were doing. Were police actually out on the streets doing police work and investigative work, or were they doing IT work and monitoring CCTV cameras in places where, or doing the mental health work that maybe could be better suited for social workers? That study was not completed, and we also did not have a plan before us for a different sort of community-first policing, and so we did what we were able to do given the information that we had in front of us, and I think it was that's moving us in the right direction. However, there was a commitment from Ms. Nelson and the whole council to drive a conversation about community first, public safety, so that when we get to the 2020 budget, we have a plan that we can fund. Because I don't think it's fair or appropriate for us to be on the receiving end of criticisms for not funding a plan that simply doesn't exist yet. So so we put that out as a primary priority, because I think we all agree that it's something that we need to get some answers to. So I'm in a I know that Mr. Basuri and Ms. Nelson in particular, really promised the community that she was going to take a leadership role on this, and Mr. Basuri said this is where your heart is as a lead on this, but it's something that I want to be clear is a priority for all of us. All seven of the council members want to move forward with this plan. So Ms. Nelson, any thoughts on your vision for this?
So what I would just add is that I think one of the main learnings coming out of our budget process is that our community has a vision for public safety that is broader than just what we've thought of as traditional policing, that people are interested in prevention, smarter forms of crime prevention and diversion, investing in people's health and wellness in ways that help them before they're at an escalated point where we then have risk of greater violence and are, you know, dispatching folks to try to address that when there's deeper root causes. There's a lot of desire for imagination around what we could do beyond police, in addition to just making our existing force more accountable. And so my intention is for this work group to make room for all of that and support initiatives that are being formed by the community, like the People's Cabinet idea that was proposed during the budget session, but also just creating community space to have a formal work group within the council that can support it. And then excited to get the support of all our colleagues as we work toward that, and especially excited, Councilmember Basuri, that you'll be in that with me. So thank you.
I think one of the in the draft, we specifically wrote 6 to 18 months, and the rationale behind that was that we will need some direction and input before we move into the budget season, but we also recognize that this issue and a plan around it will not be forthcoming in 6 months. So it's a combination of let's get a head start on this, and then also let's do a deeper dive. And you just said this, but I'm going to say it again, that one of the things that I think is frustrating for community members who want to participate is when they participate, and they express frustration when they come to the fourth reading of an ordinance, and it's baked. And it is baked. By the time we get to the fourth reading of an ordinance, we really aren't in a discussion point. So how do we get people involved in the conversation earlier? And I think that the asks are out there, but a lot of times people don't start paying attention until it's really pretty far down the pike. So I appreciate the opportunity to have these conversations with community advocates and stakeholders early on. And our hope is that we can have meetings where people can come and address the council. We're setting these up so that they don't have to be all open meetings, so they would have no more than three council members on them. But if you wanted to have a meeting where everybody was there so that people could be heard by the whole council, that's also your, as a leader in this, you're welcome to do that. And we're just inventing this as we go. So if it's, your creativity is welcome, and if it feels like you need more support or more more input from your colleagues, you should let us know. The intention is also then to update the group at org committee meetings. So we'll get a regular update from those task force, whether we're actively participating, sending our aides, or some combination thereof. Anything further on that one? Ms. Prince?
I just want to note that I think this is a great thing. I really appreciated the way that Mitra described it. Can we use first names at today's session?
Yes. I think whatever's comfortable.
Well, it's a retreat kind of.
Yeah, okay. So. First names.
I really appreciate that description, and I do, it's one of the top priorities for me, because I think in our areas of concentrated poverty, those issues that this group plans to address are just at crisis levels. So that is one that I definitely want to be involved in, and I appreciate the vision. And I appreciate also, I think it is really important that the police department be at that table as well, because I think they're willingness to adapt the way they work has really, they've really set a great tone in listening to the concerns of the community and making adjustments as they go. So I appreciate the way this is written up as well.
Absolutely, and thanks again for underscoring. I think one of the troubles we have with the size of our council at 7 people is that it's like too small to have a bunch of formal standing committees, but it's too big to be able to move forward all these items with everybody at the table at all the time. And my one concern is that because we're not all there on the co-leader role, that it would signal that we're the importance isn't there. And I think that just to be perfectly clear, it's the top thing on the list because every single council person really wants this to be our top priority. So that's the struggle. And again, we're inventing it as we go. So I appreciate your mentioning that. And I also agree about making sure that we're engaging the police department along the way. They said one of the things that I know that they're working on is we said in our budget that we wanted that staff study completed, and we did not add additional funds to take care of that. And I know that they're being, I think, very resourceful in terms of they've brought in former Sheriff Sarir is now working at the police department, and he recently did a staff study at the sheriff's department. So they're going to build off of the same techniques that were used for that staff study, which should save money on the front end and get to that question. But I believe that they are also looking for that information so that they can make appropriate staffing decisions as well. I don't think there's going to be a lot of argument about that. So that should be plugging forward. All right. So updates on that as we go, and I know that we are doing this in partnership with the mayor's office in spite of some shifts recently there, and I think that from what Ms. Nelson tells me, it's all systems go. Okay, so, and again, we put proposed shares for some of these. The second one on this list is school pedestrian safety work group, and this should not be confused with safe routes to schools. The reason this is on the list, and anything can come off the list, but the reason why this is on the list is because I think a lot of us are getting inundated with calls from neighbors who live in areas where there are schools, and trying to use the safe routes to school mechanism to get traffic engineering and changes in road infrastructure near schools. But Safe Routes to Schools is actually a program to get kids to bike and walk to school. And so we're sort of conflating two programs in that regard. And so the Faye and Mr. Stark and Russ Nelson from the Public Works Department have been working on a plan that looks at safe routes to school and pedestrian and traffic safety in the city and where the two things overlap. Because, of course, we would love every school to have a safe routes to school plan. But what's happening is the school district or the school, whether it's a private school or a charter school or a public school, has a problem because a lot of people drive their kids to school. And the schools were never designed to have 200 or 300 cars dropping off their kids in the morning. So neighbors have problems, car traffic has problems, and some schools are able to have their teachers come out and help direct traffic, some aren't. Some schools have a lot of people driving, some have very few, and one of the challenges, because it's schools, charter schools, and private schools, is getting everybody to the table to have a conversation. I think we have somewhere nearing 100 different schools when you look at all of them. And so using our platform as the city to bring all those stakeholders together and to create a best practices model and to figure out which schools rise to the surface so that we can prioritize those schools for our safe routes to school planning and city and traffic and pedestrian so that we have a plan for how things get into the queue. Because right now it's a bit mysterious. It depends on who's been doing the background work to move things forward. I know in my office, Kim O'Brien took the lead on getting Washington Technology Junior High and High School in the queue because a little boy got hit on Rice Street on his way walking to school. So this one, I think, is really using our power to convene. It shouldn't take, it doesn't have necessarily a strong budget implication. It could take anywhere from 6 to 12 months. I know that I want to participate in that. I put in Ms. Prince because I know you're interested in having more of that work done in your ward. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we can continue to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I would want to talk to the proposed partners before I try to do this, mm-hmm. because in recent conversations that I've had with Public Works, I'm getting some kind of concerning feedback about the interest or ability of the schools to make time for this. I think it probably is important for that reason to have it be at a council level. But I don't know if I want to be spending a lot of my time trying to bring people to the table reluctantly. So before I take on the chair of this, I really need to figure out how hard it's going to be and whether it's obviously a most important thing. But also, when I had a conversation, and I realize that you're saying this isn't safe routes to school, but the decision, I've got a school and two schools in my ward that are crying out for attention. And the way the schools have been picked for the next round are where they feel the schools have some willingness to work with the city. And I don't necessarily think that is the way that should work either.
That's why I put you
so, in. Yeah, so in any event, I'm kind of, I'm a little bit ambivalent about sharing it without some sense of how Public Works and our partners would work together. Because herding cats is not a good use of my time. In this particular case, unless I see some will moving in that direction. And I would like to suggest another committee, so when we get to the end, I will do that.
Mr. Tolbert?
I just want to add on, because I think you're exactly right on your concerns of how that committee works. Just my experience trying to bring a few schools together in my district, if you don't have the school district willing, any willingness at all, and not even necessarily the principal, but the school district, it becomes painful because people won't move, and you got to get the city engineer and the public schools engineer to agree on what the right outcome is and who should do it. And so I would say if we can't get the school district to the table, it becomes a very, not that it's impossible, but it's a very difficult task, because if they aren't willing to implement it or help on it, we've done a couple of these in my district, and it's become difficult when they're not willing partners.
You're absolutely right. And I'm Ms. Nanker, we're calling you. And just to say that, I think the trouble is that the schools are pointing to the city. You know, like, well, call the city. It's like, we need to figure out a way that we can engage it's also not just the school district. So I think part of it is just recognizing that we're ending up using up our city's staff time to sort of troubleshoot on some of these school issues rather than create a best practices plan. I mean, one of the questions I keep asking is, why don't kids take the bus? Why? I don't know why. You know, and like, what is the answer to that question? And are there ways that we can streamline the amount of cars that are coming to schools? But I don't know if we're having that question or that conversation. So I agree. I do think it is kind of pushing a rock up a hill, but unfortunately, it's tapping our city resources. Mm-hmm. And like, I want Faye and Russ to do other stuff, and they're ending up kind of troubleshooting for the school problems that are popping up in our neighborhoods. Ms. Nanker?
Thank you. I appreciate Councilmember Prince. Jane, we're in retreat mode. We don't have any food, so I don't feel like we're at a retreat. Your openness to and about the difficulty of getting these partners together. And I think with all of these, that these work groups are an experiment, as Amy said. And I think we all felt last year and in previous years that policy sessions weren't the right way to get a lot of work done, but it was the only tool we had. And so this idea of work groups to take on some of these ongoing projects made sense. But I think it's all in pencil. And, you know, often in our office, we look at things as the first step of that process might be just exploring whether or not the process is going to happen and whether the partners are interested. And so maybe the first thing that the committee does is just do the initial reach out to those groups. And if it looks like it's a complete dead end, we come back and say, you know, this committee isn't going to proceed with this right now. I think that's totally okay for all of these, because we don't know where we're going to go until we start.
Right.
Well,
I'll commit to a to-be-continued conversation on that with you, because I agree 100% with what you're saying, and I'm also, like, I have so many issues in the area I represent that are just, you know, and when the school is saying is called the city, then somehow or another it ends up becoming our issue, especially in 2019. So, okay. So we, Ms. Prince and I will follow up on that at our next org committee and with at least a plan on how to move forward or how to blow it up. So the next one is sales tax area revitalization. You want to take this one?
Sure. So this is going back to a lot of conversations we've had, especially during last year's budget process, about the fact that our sales tax in St. Paul is performing quite well, and also that there's been some vagueness about exactly the flow of those dollars and where it's allocated and how much goes to Neighborhood Star specifically, and whether there might be some advantage and just in saying that there's a certain amount that always goes to Neighborhood Star and then the rest is allocated a certain way. It's become a little bit more slushy. And I think there was interest among all of us in kind of doing something like what we did with CIB, in evaluating how Star dollars work and how we want them to work. So that's the idea here. And we have proposed Councilmember Tao. He's really interested in this. And we'd also be looking at the hotel and lodging tax. St. Paul's hotel and lodging and other taxes compared to other cities, perhaps, and how we should or could be using those. So.
And I think that conversations also come up when we know that during the recession, Star dollars were allocated towards debt repayment and fleet to cover fleet for the police and fire trucks. And I think as we're moving towards a consolidated fleet, that it could be appropriate for us to earmark a certain percentage of Star to fleet. But right now it's a bit vague where things are pointed to. And I think last year with PED's economic development Star money that came up, and it was popping up. so to really lock it down and have a better understanding of what's coming in, what part is reliable, and how can we be more thoughtful about where those pots of money are heading on a regular annual basis. So, yes, Ms. Prince.
And it does look like from this upcoming bond refinance or arena rent deal that we're going to end up with a little windfall.
So yeah, exactly.
This year.
Exactly.
So figuring out what we're going to do with that is a really good part of the discussion.
Yeah, good timing. Actually, we should probably add that as a bullet point to talk about the refunding of the arena bond, because I think that's absolutely right. It will make a difference there this year and into the future. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. Okay, so if other people are interested in co-chairing that, I think I like that smile. We're like, no. But it is, I think it's important work, and again, up to 3 council members can sit in on this on a regular basis, and then staff are welcome to be part of that. But it's a significant amount of money, and it's money that's mostly to capital, so it's pretty important. Ms. Naker.
I'm not uninterested in that, keeping an eye on Tina and our work plan and work capacity, but I would definitely want to serve on it, and depending on Councilmember Tao's family leave could help. And I also just want to say, kind of going back to the concept of these work groups being new things, we do really need everyone's participation to make it work. So we said up to 3 council members, hoping that there would just be like chomping at the bit for 7 council members, and we'd have to limit it to 3. I'm really hoping that it's not a struggle to get up to 3, that aides participate as well if you can't go. And obviously, I think we should choose the ones that we're interested in, but it's gonna require our participation in the process. So.
I think I would add to your point of not uninterested and just thinking through, you know, capacity and other things. I think I, in general, as a person, experience the problem of I find everything interesting and like something I could dig into and want to figure out capacity. But I think that I just want to uplift that. I think this is an important work group as a topic because it's one of the most important sources of city funds we have to really help drive innovation and invest in underinvested places. So I commit to thinking hard about how I can participate in it and support it.
And I think one other thing that we haven't made it clear is that by pulling these 3 and to an extent 4 things, and it sounds like maybe 5, to the top, we're saying that these are things that we will have Nia and Marcia supporting our work on. So we will have extra help in doing that, and also to make it clear where your priorities should be, and that if there's other things that we're working on individually as council members, that's where we can employ our own aides. These are things that we'd like to focus our staff time on because it's a priority for all of us. So, So that should help a little bit with the amount of time. Okay, audits.
Sure. And before that, just to piggyback on what you just said also, it ideally these are the things that you would want to spend your time on anyway, and by making them a work group, you're kind of taking that off your office's plate and getting council research's help. So I think what we want to do today is make sure that these are things people are interested in and care about and ideally are taking work, not just adding work. So the performance audits work group, the purpose is to evaluate the what it would take to reintroduce a function the city council used to have, which was of conducting oversight hearings and doing performance audits of city departments. It's a power of ours under the city charter. It's something that we lost during the recession when we lost a lot of our staff. And this is really important to me because I think I hear a lot from people who I talk to that, you know, trusting government is kind of shaky at best right now. And luckily at the local level, I think there's more trust in what we do. But one of the things I think we can do to help restore faith in our processes here is to show that we're really being accountable for every public dollar that we take in, that we're doing our work efficiently, that we're monitoring performance, and that we're thinking critically about our work. And I would offer that we could start in our own office. We could start in the council office to say, you know, we're really serious about making sure that we're getting the work done the best we possibly can with the dollars we have. So I think it'll be easier to go back to taxpayers and say, you know, we need additional dollars this coming year, which we know we probably will, if we are also saying we're going to restart this function of auditing ourselves and making sure we're doing the work right. So that's the purpose of this, is just to explore what it would take to restart that. It's not restarting it, because if we did want to create that function again in the council, we would need to budget for it in 2020, and so this is sort of exploratory.
Right, and I think on that point, I know that, and I believe I can speak for all of us when I say that we're not interested in asking our departments to spend $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 of their budget auditing themselves. We want our parks department to spend $150,000 on programming for kids. So if we want to do this function, we need to figure out a way to budget it out of the council's budget on the auditing function so that that work can happen and not at the cost of another thing that we value in treasure. And I think that that's been one of the challenges. Again, the thing that's been, as we've worked through this, that's been more and more obvious to me is the impacts of the loss of local government aid and how we have tried to really keep things glued together with the existing resources that we have and pushing STAR over here and cutting staff over here, putting our police in non-policing roles just to get to make the ends meet. And it's we do need more resources coming from the state to be able to fund these things that we're doing. But in the meantime, asking for our staff to do these functions without proper funding and support staff to do it is it runs counter to what I think that we want to see them doing. Yes.
This is a committee that I'd be happy to co-chair if you would like that, Councilmember Nager. And the reason for that is, and this is one of those institutional history things, and Marcia can probably help us pull out some past history, but that kind of a auditing function is part of our role under the charter. I mean, that is written into the charter. And it is definitely not any kind of a gotcha thing. It's about, you know, being responsible about making sure that things are working the way the community needs them to work. And we do, the council historically had a performance audit program using auditing best practices, and it was done by council staff. I won't go into all the anecdotes, but there are just numerous examples of where that kind of process led to significant process improvements within departments. They welcomed it, the administration welcomed it. So I think that it's really critical that we present it as a really positive thing for the council, for the mayor's office, and for the taxpayers. And I don't, you know, historically it was not any kind of a budget drain on on the departments or the divisions that were participating in it. So I may be, to some extent, overstating the ease and low cost of it. But at least, this is back, of course, and I would like to eventually get here again, when council research had policy analysts and people who were available to help us do research, to help us write ordinances. Our staff is really trimmed back, our ability to handle work that I think we need to be handling as a council is really hamstrung by the fact that our budget has been reduced so much over the years. So anyway, I welcome the opportunity to explore this, and I don't want to obligate Ms. Mormont in advance, but I will. You maybe can talk to us about if we have any documents from past audits that were done and things that we can look at to see how it worked.
I think we already signed her up.
Oh, good.
Send her.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Mr. Tolbert.
I think I still have a few of those audits left over in my office from 4 council members ago, by the way, if anyone needs them. But the question I have is, what, and this is maybe for Jane, what exactly are we, since you've been a part of it, what are you, like, what's the outcome that we're looking for in an audit? Because I don't think it's like a traditional audit to look for, like they do at the HRA and the city council where they're looking, is people embezzling money? Or it's not that type of audit. And I think that word sometimes is what scares people. Are they, like, thinking that we're, putting money to the side or something like that? But what is, and every department is different, but what, I guess that's the question that I would want to know, and that's what this group, I suspect, is going to frame, is what are we looking for? What is the outcome that we want from the audit? Are we looking for more efficiency? Are we looking for, are they implementing the policies that we pass based on money? I guess that's the question I would have, is what's the outcome that we're looking for in the question?
Yeah, and I was just saying that I don't think with that I was like, Ms. Prince, you don't have to answer that.
You don't have to answer, but you've been a part of them before. What were they looking for?
I will say it is about looking at places where efficiency. I mean, a couple of specific examples I can think of, and I won't detail, but where things were, there were backlogs on labor management contracts.
Okay,
and it was coming in and figuring out, why are these all, a year, 2 years behind schedule? And that was one where, the outcome was phenomenal. There was a whole sort of turnover and look at how they were doing things and the problem. I don't think we're behind at all now on our labor stuff, but it was 2 and 3 years behind, and so we looked at it.
Even places where, like, if we're so behind on some data entry or some a backlog on housing inspections, like, helps us know that we need to allocate more funds to hire temporary help to catch up or that, to that extent. But
yeah,
I think you're right.
It's about efficiencies and process improvements.
And I agree with that. I'm just asking more because I think that we need to be very specific when we have the ask. Otherwise, it's a very wide net. And sometimes it might be too wide for anybody to do, really dig into it.
Right, and I think to the point that people have made, it the goal isn't so much gotcha. It's to be able to support, and we want to buy it from all the parties. So to be clear, what we're looking for, I think it's really important.
Awesome. I would just say, the starting point of just exploring what a framework could look like, bringing in the values of mutuality, developing something that is a two-way conversation, is looking to support folks in working smarter, seems like a good starting point. And I think the questions that we're asking are giving some good direction for what this work group would need to kind of dig into. So it's tricky, but, I think about how, and in the demands of this job every day, even just on an individual level, anything that I'm spending time on means I'm not spending time on something else. And so understanding the tremendous expectations on all of us across departments and within the council, having a clearer picture of where we could be working more effectively seems like at least a basic common sense thing to start exploring. So I don't know that I'll be able to serve on it, but I see the worth of starting a conversation.
So we're going to move on. I just want to honor our time here. You said you had one thing you wanted to talk about adding to the task force slash work group.
And I haven't, you know, I haven't fleshed this out at all. But I have been thinking in the last several days about the housing issue, the urgency of the housing issue. And I think we made some incredibly great strides in passing our resolution in July and our follow-up on it. And I also feel that having our new housing development person in place is going to make a huge difference and help to move us forward. But I think one thing when it comes to the housing issue, it is not a problem that we can solve in St. Paul by ourselves. And I'm on the anti-displacement task force or whatever that is several cities around the country who are sharing information, and then we're working a lot with Minneapolis council members. Well, Chris and Mitra are both on that anti-displacement task force with me. And what I have discovered in that process is that there is really a lot to be said for Minneapolis and St. Paul kind of mirroring each other's efforts, informing each other's efforts, working together. I also feel that one of the things that is really crying out is the involvement of the philanthropic community, because we are not getting down to we have no plan that I've seen right now with current resources to be able to get down to the being able to develop housing that's affordable to low-wage workers. And so the philanthropic community absolutely needs to be part of a discussion. And I think what I would like to suggest is that we have a task force that, or a work group that looks at ways to broaden the cooperation between various public and private and nonprofit entities to really move this discussion forward. I'm convening a meeting next week with some school district people and some community members about the 1,300 homeless kids in our St. Paul schools. That is not a problem that we as the city are going to be able to solve ourselves. And so I think that I would like to see us having a work group that puts housing at a level where we're casting a really broad net in the community. And I've talked to Andrea, I can't remember her last name, the head of housing, Kayla's counterpart in Minneapolis. And she agrees that in every way we can, we should be sharing knowledge, passing ordinances that mirror each other, and really trying to come up with some solutions for the two cities that we can't do alone.
I'm going to maybe bounce this over to you, but I think I think the answer is yes, but we are expecting a housing plan and an update from PED next month. Okay. And one of the things that our resolution called for was the creation of a working group, mm-hmm. an ongoing working group that was monitoring and managing our role in housing, and that has not been done.
Okay.
And so I think it maybe what we need to do is make sure that that working group, when it gets, when we hear from them in March, to what we want them to be doing, mm-hmm. and be really clear about the goals. So maybe a follow-up on this would be, how do we take the infrastructure that we've already created and make sure that they're doing the work that we want them to be doing?
Great. And I think the piece that maybe isn't in our resolution is this larger issue of connecting jurisdictions and private partners, because we're not going to do this without philanthropy. I mean, solving the homeless problem and the low-wage worker housing issue is not going to be solved just through, you know, NOAA and St. Paul and the housing development partners that we have now, because PPL and Crime and Bond have made clear that the money is not available to hit 30% area median income housing. And also, Minneapolis and St. Paul are operating on this area median income formula that has nothing to do with what the median income is in St. Paul.
Right.
And it just frustrates me that in my ward, when we do 60% of area median, we are displacing Eastsiders.
Yeah.
So, you know, if our affordable housing development is effectively displacing people in poor neighborhoods, something's really wrong. And I think those are issues that we can look at by ourselves, but I think we'll get a lot further if we do it as a broader coalition.
Great. And does that make sense that it would live in the yet to be established housing work group that was part of the resolution?
Yeah, I think. Well, now that we've had Kayla on for a month, I think maybe, you know, she's been meeting with everybody to kind of get their thoughts on what the housing plan should look like and how to set up the trust fund. The 4D policy was something urgent based on a timeline, and that should be before the HRA next week.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it 2 weeks? No, today's library board. I think it's next week. My dates could be wrong, but that's an important thing, and then I think it should be part of the work group. But I would say my suggestion on how we deal with homelessness is obviously goes with affordable housing, but it's also kind of a separate issue because affordable housing is a big tent. And, you know, the thing that I've found particularly frustrating because we don't have a solution for all that. I mean, there's no silver bullet to homelessness as much as we've tried. And I think back in 2014, 2015, Mayor Coleman created the short-term task force on short-term homelessness, which I served on, and it created the Dorothy Day version 2 higher ground step-up program and ended up being the largest public-private partnership in the history of the state of Minnesota to fund homelessness centers right here in St. Paul. And yet we're finishing that, the building of that, and we see more homelessness every single day than I've seen since I've been in St. Paul. And so, I mean, I think it's a very direct conversation that we need to have on homelessness, but I think you're right to include our Ramsey County partners who get the federal funding to deal with a lot of it, include the school districts, include the nonprofit partners, as well as us. But
Met Council.
And the Met Council. And the thing that we always talked about when we were on the task force on short-term homelessness is, and the reason that we built a broad coalition of state funding, I mean, some of our greatest champions from our outstate Minnesota in terms of getting that funding done, was because it's known that the zip code of where people originally are from is not necessarily St. Paul. Like, people come to St. Paul and people come to Minneapolis because there's resources here and there's a safety net and there's power in numbers, and that's why people end up here. They might be from Anoka, they could be from Zumbrota, they could be from wherever. Some are from St. Paul. But this is where you're going to come if you don't have a place to live because there's resources here. So I think it's just it's an important conversation that we should have, and it should be a part of our task force, but I think it's also a different conversation than us producing or protecting 60% affordable housing or 60% area median income housing or producing more, you know, with our 9%, 4% credit bonds or whatever those things are. I think it obviously it all goes together under housing, but that's in my mind, it is probably what I've been thinking about, how we should look at the two, differentiate the two is kind of what I've been thinking.
And I think to that point, we did pull it out separately under council updates and our committee as sort of a quarterly check-in for the Ramsey County outside-in group that I believe Ms. Naker is participating in.
And I'll soon be joined by Council Members Nelson and Pritz.
Okay, so we will have, so that, because we aren't getting updates on what's going on there, and after the work that we did a few months, or maybe 18 months ago about homelessness, I think that we ended up feeling like we didn't need to reinvent the wheel at the council, but we needed to be more engaged in the work that was happening on the level. So to get that quarterly report from the people who are participating in that committee would be helpful. And I do have an eye on the time.
Okay. I just, and I agree, Chris, with there's homelessness that is related to mental illness and all manner of things that is one problem. But when we're talking about 1,300 school kids, that is the landlord's market, that the supply isn't there, that the affordability, you know, you can't find an apartment with a Section 8 certificate for the most part because landlords don't have to, in the current market, landlords don't have to lower the rent to that level. And so part of our problem is strictly a supply and affordability. You know, if somebody's couch surfing, it's different than the sort of long-term hardcore homelessness. So I think, and that's where I bring up the low-wage worker issue, because we for 12 years we did no 30% area median income affordable housing, and meanwhile our supply is down at all income levels. And so part of the homeless problem we're having now for school families is not that higher ground problem. Right. It's affordability, it's supply, it's...
And I have Ms. Nelson and Mr. Basuri also, and I just want to remind people, we're setting up these work groups and conversations so we can talk about this stuff more in depth.
Yeah.
There's, because I'm looking at our other things that we are looking for presentations, and it's workforce development related to poverty. Those are things we wanted to get checked in on. So it's, we all, there's so many layers to it, and we are trying to tackle it. So Ms. Nelson.
I can be brief. I would just go back to kind of one of the original points that Jane just made, that I'm part of the same anti-displacement regional work group effort, and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul are there, and we need even more cities in that group, but the way it's structured is just a good initial sharing across cities strategy session. But I am always in those meetings hungry for just time with St. Paul internally, with department leaders, with our colleagues, key community members who've been leading this work for a really long time to coordinate. And we're in this moment right now where there's more political will than ever around taking on our housing crisis, and I think the real barrier is getting ourselves organized. So I think that the idea generating in the resolution preceding this conversation is right on schedule. I'm excited we're going to have a work plan ahead of us soon and that we're picking it up, but just want to affirm the need. Thanks.
I agree, and it's true. It's sort of a both. Like, we want to make sure we're working with our sister city, but also we left the conversation last week at Minneapolis feeling like we heard a lot of information about Hennepin County and Minneapolis that didn't necessarily translate to Ramsey County.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. It was like, we can tackle these problems, but I don't think that's actually the problems that we need to tackle. Mr. Basuri.
I just wanted to add what Councilmember Prince said. The issue is, there's many issues, and I think we need to explore where are the most issues at. I know from the immigrant community, it's bigger families and not enough housing for bigger families. And when you look at the new developments, it's two bedrooms and one bedroom. It doesn't accommodate the larger families that need the three-bedroom, four-bedroom apartments. They're not ready to buy a house. They can't afford to pay rent, so we need to look at where the issues are, and like Councilmember Prince said, is it's the schools that are displaying the numbers, giving us the numbers, but those kids are coming from immigrant families. They're coming from our families that need the support, and we need to make sure that developments coming up are going to support those families and to keep them here and not to let them go to the suburbs.
And so we'll work with Commissioner HRA Chair Tolbert on how the housing piece of this comes forward versus the piece of the tenant protection, the reducing barriers, and the things that were laid out in the resolution that we wanted council research to work on. So we're going to shift over just a quick run through the list of things that we're expecting, the short list of things we're expecting to get updates on this year. If there's things on, if you walk away from this conversation and say, wait, well, you're going to get an update on something and it's not here, you can let us know. The intention is to agree that these are the things we wanted to get updates on and map them out onto our calendar. We're trying to have an eye towards which things we need to hear about before the budget, which things are timely because projects that are happening, and which things can wait till later on in the year, what other items can be reported on in org committee. And for the first section you'll see is items that I believe can just be a report at the city council meeting. So we've been talking about a report on debt and bonding rates and the trends, projections, and kind of where we're at. We always hear from our OFS when they're in the process of selling bonds, but this would be more of an update and a check-in on where we're at and kind of where we're headed. And so I think that will be timely. We had a conversation about SAC fees during the end of the budget year, talking about increasing fees to cover the cost of helping people save money on SAC charge or SAC fees, and it seemed a little bit ridiculous. But on the other hand, the efforts that we make there have saved people over $1 million in SAC charges. So I think understanding, having the Met Council come in and talk about what they're doing and helping them to understand the implications of a SAC fee on areas where development is costly and they're not able to charge high enough rents in order to make those developments possible. And then when you add SAC on top of it, it's basically a deal breaker for some specifically areas of concentrated poverty. And speaking specifically for the North End and the East Side, projects have come to a halt because of SAC. So understanding if the Met Council is aware of that and what we can do to work with them on alleviating some of that pressure. An update on the Workforce Innovation Board, the Workforce Development Plan as it relates to poverty, our annual check-in from the Port Authority, check-in from Greater MSP. I would love to hear from our state demographer again. Every time she comes, she blows my mind. It's amazing. I think the last time she came in and let us know that the average age of a resident in the city of St. Paul was between 20 and 25, which is not the average, the highest age demographic. So that was incredible. So we'll have her back again. Going through these, if there's any that stand out to you or things you want to dig in a bit, we asked for a fire strategic plan for how many years, Mr. Tolbert? Six? Seven? Seven. And I think that the plane has finally, I'm heading towards the airport, and we will hear a strategic plan in, I believe, March 27th. It's scheduled. Human resources, again, that was one of the places where they needed some time to show data to back up the work that they've been doing. We asked for information about the city attorney's office change, the immigrants' rights, new funds and hires, and the funds that rolled over from last year to this year. Mostly just to get an update. When we approved the budget, there wasn't a plan in place, and we just would like to understand where how things have shaken out with that. An update, same thing, Office of Financial Empowerment. We approved a budget, but the plan was still in the works, so get an update on that. A check-in on the cultural destination areas and the funding that was attached to that. We have been talking for a few years also about the city and school shared facilities plan, and we have a consultant working on that. We haven't heard back from them in a while. We think that it's we talked about efficiencies in creating facilities that schools and the city are sharing the use, because the schools use them when the city doesn't need them as much, and also understanding that we're ready to hit the ground running with an early start time that begins next year. We would like an update on the K-9 unit audit that we had, and also we heard from the community engagement unit and the crime prevention team and the police department, and I believe there was uniform agreement that we needed to hear back from them again and understand what was being accomplished there. A check-in on open for business. A check back on Parks and Rec, the program data statistics. I think this is to match some of the funding increases that we've done for areas of concentrated poverty and free programming, as well as other things. We have long wondered about planning commission studies and the long list of things that we asked to be studied but then get put in the to-do pile. And what is the to-do pile looking like, and what are timelines on it, particularly poignant with our Concordia conduit bond that's in front of us today. You know, when we continue to ask about conversion of industrial or commercial land to nonprofit status and what we can do to help protect our tax base from changes. let's see, updates on ADUs, a check-in on our trash system. We do have a meeting on the schedule with the haulers and three members of the council to have a check-in. It sounds actually like that could be a productive meeting that was needed to be rescheduled, but we are moving forward with that. As we mentioned earlier, outside in from Ramsey County, and that would be a quarterly update. The housing resolution from council research and getting that on the schedule. And then the last thing on our list is a monthly meeting for general updates. And normally we talk about the committees and commissions that we're on, and we will add to that things that you see on this list. So our task forces and work groups, as well as our transit corridors and other organizations and committees that we sit on. And then, of course, the our housing plan, which, as you mentioned, our new housing director has been around for a ripe 30 days, and we will be hearing from her as part of HRA in the coming months, I believe. Okay. It's a lot of work, folks, and I think we've done a pretty good job of narrowing it down to the things. Rebecca at one point said, I cared about this at one time, now I don't, and we just crossed it right off the list. So we did whittle it down as well. Mr. Tolbert.
Not about this.
Not about this. Something
one thing
that's
on the list.
That's all right. We figured out. It's all good. Mr. Tolbert.
Two things that, and I think it's just part of one of the budget meetings at the end of the year, but we should make sure Business St. Paul comes back. At the end of the year, as part of our budget thing, to present their budget. I would suggest that they came this year, and I think it's a good thing since we're their main source of money. And the other thing is we had on here the workforce update. I think it would make sense to have that, but probably later in the year, the Greater Metropolitan Workforce Board, which I serve on, just announced their director. Her name is Andrea Furstein. Andrea Furstein. She just got announced this week. She'll be housed in the Osborne building. But that will mean some movement. It took us to get the GAPA moved between seven counties. It took like a year. And then Ramsey County Workforce Solutions, Ramsey County Local Workforce Board is, I think, in their final interviews for a director, for a permanent director. So I think it would make sense to give them time to finish up what they're doing and then give it for us. So.
How long did it take Ramsey County to move from one director to the next?
Well, they went back out the first time around, which, you know, it takes time, but you'd rather, considering the last director was there for 20 years, you'd rather have the right candidate than just somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that we've had an interim person who's, you know, fulfilled the job.
So both the Greater Metropolitan Workforce and WIB.
Yeah, I think we
but
should.
Later.
I think we should do it similar to how we did last time around. Mm-hmm. With them and Gritter, and then our PED staff up there too, talking about how we're kind of interacting. Kristen Guild probably would be the main person. But.
Okay, you mean like how we had the report at the council table with everybody?
Yeah, and we can do that at HRA too if we need to.
Two super quick additions. Heading Home Ramsey is interested in coming and presenting to us, and that could either be just at a council meeting or it could be part of housing stuff outside in perhaps. And then I think
maybe they could explain the difference between Heading Home and outside in.
I thought that might be
same day.
Great, makes sense. Okay. To that. And they're actually interested in having council representation on Heading Home. So instead of just kind of sitting down for one meeting, I said you should come and talk to us about everything that you do, and we can talk about it. And then under police, I think we should add the customer service survey that they do, because they have some initial data back on that, and I'd be interested in all of us talking to them about how that's going and how they're making changes to make sure they're getting representative data.
Okay. Great. No more stuff. Just kidding. If things come up and you want to add it. I mean, I think that we'll cover these things. Sometimes it'll be an update, and then the work will have to happen outside of a council because there's only so many Wednesdays in a month and a year. So this is good, helpful conversation. Let's move on to our calendar overview, and then we have time to quickly do that and run through our budget update. Sorry, Holly.
That's okay. Council members, just briefly, there's a calendar that I'm starting to schedule things into. I wanted to have this meeting and then start reaching out to directors some directors have already got back to me and said when a good time would be to come and update you. So this calendar just represents, we do have the fire strategic plan scheduled. The public works will be in April for the trash update. City attorney's office and financial office of financial empowerment will be in May. Then I've also just included the first Monday of each month will be an org meeting with the regular updates.
First Wednesday,
yeah.
Okay. And again, that will be covering what's happening in work groups and as other, and we're going to put it in. I think sometimes it's easier to block out the time, and then if we don't need the meeting, we have the lovely time for free. But if we don't block it out, it's hard to get on the schedule, so we're just going to lock up that time period. And so you're working to fill this in. So Holly will continue to send this to us as it fills in. I would just like to say, can we schedule it from 10 to 11:30?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just curious why we don't have every Wednesday on here.
Well, I guess I was waiting to make sure that I had a complete list and that nothing got added or taken away from the list that we just walked through. And then I was going to take the next step of getting everyone scheduled.
Okay, so the missing March 20th in between the 13th and the 27th, we are going to meet that day. It's
yep.
just not.
Oh, right.
You mean why they're not filled in?
Well, there's some that are blank, and then there's some that just aren't on here, and I just wanted to make sure we are meeting every Wednesday.
Just filling them in.
That's the other point is we talked about maybe trying to meet two times a month for org meetings if we can manage the calendar so that you're not meeting every single Wednesday. But if I need to schedule a Wednesday, I guess I might need to move things around.
And we do try to go easier on org committee and check-in and council committee meetings on days where we also have public hearings just for sanity's sake. So we'll try to load up the weeks that don't have public hearings first, but it will ultimately be most.
And also just not every one of these dates are filled in because we are aware of an event or whatever that you all have been invited to that would make it impossible to meet. So.
Okay, so maybe on those ones we should write that in. But this is a monumental task, and I appreciate that you're moving that forward. And we'll look for updates as you fill in the blanks.
Okay, so now 2019 budget updates. So we did a lot of work to get the 2019 budget approved and passed, and now I'm back before you to kind of talk about some of what has come out of those actions and what has come out of the budget that was approved. And so a few things. I'm going to talk briefly about district council's funding. You increased the funding by $250,000. The COP organization partnership program. I've also have the year-round budget attached. And then I also included in this packet of information budget topics that I'm taking back. And in a way, it's my work plan to make sure that there's follow-up and it's being monitored throughout the year. So for district councils, I'm just going to follow some notes and start with a brief background just to set the stage. And so district council funding has, they receive funding from the Citizen Participation Fund. So that's managed by Planning and Economic Development. And until recently, that budget has been just about $1.1 million between CDBG funds and general funds, and that budget has stayed flat for the last few years. District councils also have in the past been receiving community organizational partnership program contracts, COP contracts, I'm going to say COP from now on, and that's a discretionary funding source decided on based on what the ward what the ward's working on with the district councils. So that's more of a discretionary funding. In 2005, the citizen participation funds have been allocated based on a census funding formula. So PED has a census funding formula to make sure that the money is allocated based on population, poverty, residents who speak a language other than English in the home, and number of jobs. So recognizing that in some areas with these characteristics, some they require more funding. And however, there is a minimum amount of funding support to make sure that all areas receive an amount of money to benefit their residents. And so that minimum amount has been the same since 2013. And this year, the district councils did a study, and they came back and said that the funding has been flat for many years, and it's getting harder and harder in this job market and to recruit people and do the work they want to be doing. And so the city council in 2019 increased their budget by 21% and added $250,000. Part of that increase, we're deciding to increase the minimum allocation by $5,000. So by 10%, everyone will get a 10% increase, and then the rest of the remaining budget will be based on that census-based allocation. So included in your packet is then what that means, what that translates to dollars. So that's for, so that looks like this. And then it has what the 2018 budget was, how much CDBG, how much general funding. The innovation fund was decided for 3 years would be allocated equally among district councils, and then the total. And then it shows the increase over last year. With this increase, so there's quite a substantial increase to some of the district councils. Everyone has received a healthy increase. And the other thing to note is just the COP funding in the past, like last year, only 10 of the 17 actually received COP funding. So that's been intermittent. So that hasn't been a dependable part of their budget. So this really boosted their budgets. With that additional money, the other item to note is that with the PED management of contracts and with the city council management of contracts, the district councils are spending a lot of administrative time. And to deal with both departments, we have different processes. They have to answer questions and submit reimbursement to both. And so by increasing their funding, I'm proposing that district council, we don't give COP grants to district councils, or that that money was funneled through the increase in the budget. And so that's a discussion point, and that's just a thought, just to save on administrative burden, administrative time, and ease for the district councils.
And I think that was part of the motivation behind this change, is that we were able to keep the dollars that were attached to the COP funds, but shift the responsibility that had been associated with those to the administration. So we had basically 250 free and clear dollars of resources that we pushed back into the district councils, but with the idea that the remaining COP balances that go to the wards that are increasing a bit to a round number, instead of like 13,921 or whatever it was before, are not then allocated back to the district council. So we try to cover both things at the same time. But that was part of what motivated this. And I would also say this was a huge move for the council, and the district councils are really happy about this change. And I think from a workload perspective, it just makes so much more sense for the council as well. So this is one of the little successes in the budget that I think is worth tooting our horns about, because it's a big win all the way around. Yes.
I appreciate this breakdown. This is really helpful to understanding the changes that were made. So one question I have is, my understanding is there's a work group that's working on figuring out how to then have appropriate representation requirements that, you know, adhere to what each constituency served by each of the councils looks like, and is tying the funding to better representation. Do you or other people here have the ability to speak to that, or share a little more high level about the status of that work group, who's part of it, and all that?
No. We need an update from that group, yep. But I think this is purely on the funding side today.
Sure, okay.
But yes, that is important, and we do need an update.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was also thinking, looking at this, I'm really glad we're doing this increase. I agree that it was a huge success last year to get this done. Our district councils have needed more resources for a really long time. And at the same time, we had heard from district councils last year both about the need for more dollars, and we had had a really productive two-way conversation about our need to see certain standards of representation and other kind of metrics of consistency across them. And I think this is, in my mind, this is a good faith gesture towards that process to say, we know you need, we're starting with making this extra contribution, and at the same time, we expect that that work group process will continue. So I see them tied together.
Great. Absolutely. And we do need an update, and I just, I would rather get an update that they're prepared to give as opposed to one that they're winging it today.
Great.
But I one idea that is in the hopper is just ultimately that if we bring out the administration of the district councils into the city council's purview, that then the accountability piece and the budget is in our hands.
It's all in the same wheelhouse.
Which is similar to the budget for the rest of the city. So that's something that we're looking at going forward to be able to enforce that accountability side.
Thanks. I just think it's so important. And I just think this is an example of the kind of thing where if we create and add the resources, which we all agree with and see the value of, but don't build the system to implement it fairly, we risk perpetuating existing inequities in our city. So I'm really happy that it's happening, that it's moving toward a more accountable direction. I think funding the organizing that it takes to get everyone at the table is very laborious, and it deserves these resources. So this is a good step. Thanks.
Okay, if there's no more questions on the district council budget, I'll move on. So the Community Organization Partnership Program is a general fund program, and each ward office has received, as Council President Brenmoen mentioned, an interesting number of $13,619 to contract out with community organizations in their neighborhoods to work on programs that benefit the residents and neighborhoods. Some of the examples would be to end domestic violence, services for youth and children, senior services, literacy services, conflict resolution. Just some examples might be like the newsletters or a social or a community garden. So that's what some of these contracts have funded. And so this year, the budget increased slightly. So each ward office will be receiving $15,000. And this will be... And with the change in district council funding and increasing their funding, too, this really provides a great opportunity to invest in other nonprofit organizations in the community. And that, I guess, with this, it would be a nice opportunity to increase the minimum amount to $5,000, so increasing those contracts like to a minimum of $5,000, and that's really a nice chunk of money for these nonprofits. It is also, if they have to apply to many small many organizations for funding, this would maybe help them so that they just have one contract and organization that they're getting from. I'm sure that's not the case, but you know what I'm saying.
But it's not a maximum. It's like a minimum of $5,000, but if you wanted to do your whole $15,000 for one organization, that's also acceptable.
Correct, yep. So I don't know if there's any discussion on that. But and as things come up, too, we can talk about them throughout the year. But
I think the impetus, again, behind this was that the amount of administrative time behind some of the $600, $1,000, $2,000 contracts was very high compared to the money we're outputting. But then, again, on a case-by-case basis, if something's it doesn't fit into that criteria, it certainly can be looked at. But the goal is $5,000 as a minimum.
Okay. Next, I'm cruising through.
Oh, we have to cruise through even faster.
Okay, let's go. Okay, so then I just have some really exciting news that I'm excited about. But so I think this is like the year of 2019 to find efficiencies and just to look for ways to do things differently to save time. And so one of those things I looked into was automating the COP contracts. And so we can partner with Hero and they can automate these contracts. So right now we're asking our vendors to fill out an application, a many-page application, 12 pages. Then they get a contract, and it's handwritten around, and people have to sign the green sheet. Then Raquel enters it into an offline tracking system and tracks all the reimbursements and each each contract that we have. And so by partnering with HERO, they would fill out a service agreement, probably with the ward office, and then Raquel or myself would still act as a liaison between ward offices and HERO. HERO would then put it into the INFOR system, and then everything would become automated. So they would get reminders of, here's your contract, please sign it. It's been a week, please sign your contract. They'll get reminders of, your contract's going to expire, please submit your reimbursement. So I think it's really a win-win. And then it's also in the system. Oh, it went away, shoot. But so this is the new INFOR system, but it just pops up. We can report and we can track expiration dates and that type of thing. Supplier or the vendors will have to come and fill out, be registered as a supplier, but I think that's a benefit to them too because then they're on the St. Paul list. So,
great.
If there's any questions, ask me.
And it could be a little bumpy on our first transition, but I do think that it also takes out some of the. It's a system, there's deadlines. And so we don't have to have so many of the conversations about extensions or, oops, I forgot. There's a lot of built-in reminders to help people succeed. So I think this is a good move for us.
Go, Holly.
Yeah. I think that's all. I've lost my sheet. Oh, I guess then in your packet, those are more of a, sorry. So including your packets, the year-round STAR budget, I'm not planning to go over that. That's for your information. That includes the $50,000 that was added in the 2019 budget. And then the last two pages are just 2019 budget topics that are on my list to monitor. Includes things like the five-year street plan. So Public Works needs to come back before the council and approve their five-year street plan before we bond for those projects this year. Things like, where's the additional mill and overlay funding going? What about the commercial vitality zone? So this is just my list of things that I'm going to be working on this year. And if there's anything to add, please let me know. And then also studies to monitor. So there's quite a few studies in the budget in 2019. So we'll just want to make sure that you get those studies and know what the recommendations was of them. So forestry garage, snow plowing, parking meter pilot in regional parks, transportation study, policing study.
So so folks who are looking at this, the front page of the stapled packet has our ward balances. Thank you, Ms. Nicker, for showing me that. And it looks like the only two that might be different are 6 and 7 because there's an outstanding. Does the figure for 6 and 7 include the 49 and the 4,000?
So the pending projects above are included already in the balance. They're
okay,
taken
so,
under the balance.
So for example, Ward 6 has 171,000 and a pending project for 49 that's already been deducted.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. Did you hear that, Mr. Busseri?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. We're going to actually come out to your office after this meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And it looks like, as per usual, it looks like there's some of the funds that need some cleanup attention. Things that have been sitting too long and need to be closed out. And I think I will speak for all of us when I say, let's do that. At least get an update from these groups as far as when they're planning to spend and what's the holdup. Because when we have things that are still hanging out there from 11, at least it's not before our time here. But well, maybe 11 is. Yeah. Well, I'm looking at Mr. Tolbert. 11, no. So that would be great too. And I will just say this: the year-round money doesn't have a. Establish replenishing source, and it's usually something that comes at the end of the budget. Be sure to use them as they're not, the intention isn't to hang on to them, it's to invest them in your ward. And then you, Holly, you pointed out the list of things that you're monitoring, and we can dig into that further. Those are items that kind of dovetail a little bit with the things that are on our check-in list, but also just that we requested in the 2019 budget and making sure that we're keeping an eagle eye on them, especially as we have transition in our administration and finance department. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. We did it. Okay. Well, there's we have a lot of work in front of us, and we'll be checking back in on some of the things that we discussed today. Thank you for your input today and along the way to get here. We have a luncheon at 12 with BOMA, so we'll see everybody there shortly. Thank you. And if there's nothing further, we're adjourned.